Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering Game of Thrones Season 6, Episode 5, The Door, and Season 6, Episode 6, Blood of My Blood.
Yes. Yes, we are. And I gotta say, I had probably like bumped some of the information from Season 6 in my head to Season 7. Probably in my head trying to make Season 7 more interesting. I'd forgotten some of the stuff being in here. I knew some of the things in these two episodes were in this season for sure. And I'm excited about covering the rest of the season. I think we're going to be like happy about this. So
I did have like a gasp moment at the beginning of episode 6 because I forgot it happened. I forgot it.
Me
I
too.
Knew it happened in this season. I just forgot when.
I thought it happened at the beginning of season 7, honestly. I was like,
oh, wait. Was it episode 6? No, it wasn't. It's episode 7. Sorry.
Whatever. But I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I know what I'm talking about.
I thought it was season 7. I was like,
no, it's season 6.
So excited. Anyway, so there are a lot of good things that we need to get to. We have our usual caveats that we will have cursing. Oh, fuck yeah. If nothing else, quoting some of these characters, that for sure.
Oh, I have a lot of quotes written down for these. Like we're doing a double like recording day. And so I have so many quotes from these four episodes. It's not even
funny. I have a lot of quotes to go around for the remainder of the season, probably. And we're probably just going to have to be kind and split them up because there's so many good lines.
Yeah, we will.
But we also have spoilers, most likely, although apparently I can't really spoil season 7 because a bunch of the stuff I thought was happening in season 7 is happening now. And we're having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I'm having probably my favorite herbal tea, wild berry tea by Twinings.
Ooh.
I don't know if it's my favorite herbal tea because I do love Sleepy Time and Nightly Calm, but it's definitely top three. I love this herbal tea and I love the fruity flavors. It's awesome. It's very soothing.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, for this episode, I am having the Three-Eyed Raven cocktail, which I think is totally, it's not typical.
I'm kidding.
It's totally appropriate. But I will tell you that I'm not really following much of the recipe that's in here because I don't have the ingredients. But I'm going to tell you what the recipe actually is. I think mine is probably much, much better, or at least much, much better to me. So that's what really matters.
I think that's more fair.
Yes. So this calls for 1.5 ounces of absinthe.
Ugh.
Yeah. 1.5 ounces of elderflower liqueur.
Okay.
Which I do love, Saint-Germain.
I do love
it.
Elderflower liqueur.
2 ounces of Lillet Blanc, which I don't have with Lillet Blanc. Don't have it, so, and never tried it. Can't tell you anything about it. 2 ounces of fresh lemon juice, a dash of gin, and 3 blackberries for Black Eyes of Ravens. I did hold on to the 3 blackberries.
That's the only thing you held on to?
No. I because I don't really like absinthe, I do have green chartreuse in the house, which is somewhat similar. I used 1/2 ounce of green chartreuse. I did a whole ounce of elderflower liqueur. I did a whole ounce of lemon juice, a dash of gin, and I topped it with ginger beer and put 3 blackberries in it. And I like it. I have no idea whether this is comparable in any way. I know it has less liquor. I don't care because, you know, obviously we're double recording today and I probably need to be less drunk for the next couple episodes.
Well, to be fair, I'm having tea right now. For the next recording, I probably will drink.
There you go.
But sorry to disappoint, it will probably just be the box wine I have open.
Hey, you know what? You know who would drink box wine by the tubful? Tyrion.
And Cersei.
So,
and Cersei. That's true.
So I'm not worried about it. I think it's fine. So let's
I'm just started. Sorry. I'm sorry for the listeners for me repeating so often. But fuck you.
You should be embarrassed.
I'm kidding. So, don't know. I'm sorry. Listeners.
All right. I will tell you, I had forgotten the placement of this episode. I've not been like looking at episode names or whatever, but we are going to be doing season 6, episode 5, The Door. And yes. What are our sections?
One second. I feel like I missed a section. Let me double check. Yes, I did. I missed Dothraki and Marine because I didn't care.
Not making notes.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. Our sections are Beyond the Wall, Night's Watch, Braavos, Pike, Dothraki, and Marine. Where should we start? I think Dothraki.
Dothraki. Pretty boring. Okay, I'll start. Okay, oh, good.
Okay. Go ahead. Daenerys debates on what to do with Jorah because he has saved her life many times, countless times, truly. But he betrayed her once. So she doesn't know how to weigh those options there. Jorah shows her the grayscale and says he loves her. And she's like, he's like, well, I'm gonna end things before things get too bad, so long, I love you. And he turns around to leave, and Daenerys is like, Jorah the Andal, your queen has not dismissed you. And I'm like, bitch, please. But then she's like, okay, I demand that you find a cure and heal yourself. and she will want, because she wants him by her side when she conquers Westeros. And her and the Horde are heading back to Marine.
Yeah.
Speaking of Marine, do you want to go to Marine?
Yeah, we can go to Marine. I will say that the emotion in that scene, I think so much of it, she reacts to Ian Glenn. Ian Glenn is very sincere in this. It's kind of like when he was leaving Lady Mary, like it's like a good parting lover kind of speech.
It's very different, but okay.
Yeah, but I mean, the emotion, he conveys that mixed emotion really well, I think.
Yeah, sure.
And so I think she reacts to that. And I think, you know, the same could be said of Lady Mary. All right, Marine. There have been no killings by Sons of the Harpy since the truce. And Tyrion's like, hey, these are things I can spin to the public. And it's a better story. Like he wants to make sure that people believe that Daenerys is responsible for the increase in safety. And so he wants people to spread this information. He is like Mr. Media. Like, let's find some sort of platform like TikTok that we can use. And instead of TikTok, he's using red priests or priestesses to spread the story that Daenerys is responsible for all of this. He brings in a red priestess who says that Daenerys is the princess who is promised, and that she has these dragons, and the dragons will purify all of the sinners by fire. And the whole time, like, Varys is standing there like, I don't like these red priest people to begin with, but like, no, we're not gonna be like just burning people, okay? We're not doing your purification by fire shit. Tyrion's like, yeah, well, we're really playing to lead people, we're not playing to burn them all. Varys really kind of starts jumping in because it feels like Tyrion has betrayed some basic tenet of all of the people who are devoted to Daenerys. Like, he's got the slavers basically letting them do whatever the fuck they feel like, which gets under Missandei and Grey Worm's skin. And now he's kind of like turned on Varys, who he knows can't stand these Red Priest type people. So he expresses his skepticism about using the red priests and priestesses to spread this word, and this idea that everything is the Lord's will. I think the red priestess in this, if I remember right, she tells Varys his story, and she's like, I know what the flames said to you, like when your parts were burning, and he's like, just stop.
Can I also say, this red priestess looks so much like Rachel Weisz?
She does. She does.
I tried to look it up and see if it actually was. There was nothing on IMDb, so I don't think it's actually Rachel Weisz necessarily, but it looks so much like her.
It's not, but she is lovely. Anyway, but yeah, that's long and short of it. And that's Marine.
All right, Pike. They gather to choose a new ruler, and Yara puts herself forward, but people are sexist. Theon has cleaned himself up a bit. He's gotten a haircut. He's taken a bath. Good for you. And so yeah. Everyone's like, hey, what about Theon? And Theon's just like, nah, I don't want that. Yara's your queen. And Yara really appreciates
it. It's nice for Yara. I think it's really very nice the way it comes across. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, he gives kind of a speech about how great Yara is, and she really appreciates that. And then Euron comes out of the blue and is like, hey, I want it. I want the throne. And ruins the vibe. Yara knows that he killed Baelon, and he's like, yeah, no, I totally did. I threw him off of a bridge.
And he owns how fucked up that is.
I love his energy. It's so freaking funny. Anyway, he says, yeah, no, I totally threw my brother off of a bridge so that I could have this exact moment. And then Yara's like, well, here's my plan. I'm going to build an iron fleet, and we are going to take back land or what. I really don't know their plan. I think their plan mostly is just...
What? Rule the sea. Rule the
sea. Yeah, but I heard you. But I'm confused about why. Like, you kind of already do. Like, I don't see what the problem is. Like, you're not going to fare well in Westeros on land. And I think the point is to make them look more like a strong house. And so maybe that's it. But, like, either way. She's like, I'm going to build an iron fleet. And so Euron says, well, he says the exact same thing, but louder. And he's just like, yeah, no, I'm going to build an iron fleet, but 1,000 ships strong. And because I actually know how to use it. And not, like, Yara doesn't, but like, he's like, I've gone all over the world. I know exactly what to do with this 1,000 ships, and I'll be able to do it, even though, and like, Theon brings up a separate but interesting point. You haven't been here. Where have you been? And Euron's like, fuck that, I've been around the world, and now I have all the expertise I need to lead you people, even though you do not know me.
This is Daenerys shit. It's straight up different.
But at least he was born there and like lived there for longer. Anyway, they rule in favor of Euron for whatever reason, because he's louder and he looks like that. And
you forgot to mention that part of his plan with the fleet is to go and like
so his plan is to like take the iron fleet and go over to the winning side and like go over the narrow sea, go to Daenerys, propose marriage, like to like join the houses, and to just help her conquer Westeros, and then he'll be put in a better position overall than other houses that go against her. And so, because she has 3 dragons, and that's all that matters.
But the phrasing is hilarious. She's like, oh, she won't be able to resist my giant cock or something like that.
Something like that. Because Yara's like, you're going to seduce the Dragon Queen. And he's like, no, the Iron Fleet will seduce the Dragon Queen, but my big cock will really help. And so then they rule in favor of Euron, and they do a weird drowning ritual as a coronation. Like, he's held underwater and until he almost drowns, and then they just kind of leave him on the beach waiting for him to like just come back to life.
He and he also does. Has like, he's fine. He's got the ugliest crown, though. I mean, it's
driftwood. And they put a driftwood crown on him. And he's like, hey, where's my niece and nephew? Let's go murder them. Literally word for word, that's what he says. But by this time, Yara and Theon have already escaped with some men and the biggest and fastest ships. But he's like, no matter. Get the lumber workers working. Get those women making those sails. We're going to make the 1,000 ships, because that doesn't take for fucking ever. So
I look at this and like, there is not a tree in sight. This is like barren wasteland and rocks and shit.
There's not a fucking fir in sight. Like, what is that?
What is this? But okay, Euron, and we are gonna see that somehow some of this shit happens, so whatever.
Heck is probably the worst place to be. If you had to choose a seat in Westeros to live at, where would you live? I know where I live. Ooh, I live in the Reach where nothing is a problem and you can just drink wine and go to flower festivals all day.
So you would be like growing strong is what you're trying
Damn
to say.
right I would be. And I'd be
Natalie
growing fucking
Barker growing
strong
strong.
as hell. I'd be doing so well for myself. It would be great.
You know, and we don't get to see very much of those other places. I think, you know, and I don't want to spoil too much, but Hornhill looks kind of
Yeah, we
attractive.
that's kind of the inspiration behind it in a
Yeah,
way.
I, you know, I had not thought about this. I need to like have that brewing in the back of my head and I'll come back to it. How's
I
that?
will tell you this just straight up, Mom. If you say Winterfell, you are lying because you would not survive in Winterfell with all the
Time I
cold.
would have. There was
There
a
was
time.
a time, but now it has passed. You cannot stand the cold.
Dorne's pretty.
I don't know if, well, they don't hurt women in Dorne, so maybe you'd be okay.
Bullshit. Anyway, they hurt women everywhere. I
Mean,
don't.
they do have some cool outfits in Dorne. I will give them that.
Yeah, they have cool clothes. And that's true. I gotta think about it.
Anyway, yeah, so
All right.
that's Pike. Do you want to do
Bravos?
Braavos?
Bravos. Bravo.
Braavos. Oh, I
Bravo.
love
We are
this.
Bravosi. All right, so and I'm whatever. Arya and the wife fight. And they are fight it's basically more practice fighting.
I was about to say, they're not just fighting for fighting's sake.
They're sparring, whatever, and Arya is getting significantly better, and I know it's making like the wife kind of worry, but the wife does eventually knock Arya down, and the wife is super cocky. She's like, "You're not ready," and Arya like is on her back. She jumps straight up, just using like her back and her legs. Like it's pretty freaking amazing. And the wife's like, "You'll never be one of us." So Jaqen then says, "None have been." You know, explains to Arya that no one who has been a member of the House of Black and White has been a lord or a lady. And he tells the story of the first faceless man, and you know that they have their goal is to have no desires, blah blah blah. So he gives her a task. You know, we're you know, you can't have a face yet, but you know, let's test you out. You get a second chance. Let's see how it goes. And this involves a woman, an actress named Lady Crane, and she is supposed to be poisoned. And the play that she is in is about the succession in Westeros. And
I love this subplot so fucking much. It is
of
the
course
best thing
you
ever.
do. Of course you do. And we see at various points different scenes from this play. So it's a play within a play, which is, I know, one of your favorite things.
How
So
did you
I don't know, Natalie.
know?
Shakespeare Club girl.
Yeah.
So they've got a play about the succession. The play makes fun of Ned, and you can tell that it really is bugging Arya that they're making fun of Ned and that the crowd's laughing. And of course, you the reality is that the crowd, much like a lot of people out in the world, gets their information from these plays. They don't really know the history. They don't know the details. They know rumors and stuff like that. And so they take a lot of what they see in this play as being accurate, much like people now take shows about things as being accurate, or like comedy shows or whatever as being like sources of news. And you know, you can tell that she's really bothered. And they go through the whole Sansa and Tyrion being betrothed, and you can tell that Arya didn't know that. This is new information for her. The guy playing Robert is the guy who was the art expert on Downton
Yeah,
Abbey.
Bricker. Is
Bricker, ugh, and he's ugh, in this too.
it Bricker?
Yeah,
I
I
think
think
it
that's
is.
right. Yeah, I think that's his,
Yeah, it's Bricker.
yeah.
I was getting the I was thinking it's Simon Bricker because but I was thinking of Simon Brimmer from Ellery Queen, so I was
Yes.
concerned I got them mixed up.
Yeah, no, it's Booker. So Lady Crane is playing Cersei, and she's actually pretty good. Arya is able to get backstage and find out that the actress playing Lady Crane is the only person who drinks rum on the set. And so Arya discusses with Jack, and Lady Crane seems like a decent person. And Jaqen's kind of like, look, you don't decide. The god of that we serve, the god that we serve, the many-faced god, is, has a name, and that's the name that needs to be served up, whether they're good or they're bad. That's not really the issue. The issue is that it's time. So that's pretty much Barack.
Oh, no, there's an interesting point of she wants to know who offered her name up to the many-faced god, but then she automatically figures out that it's the young actress playing Sansa who is jealous of Lady Crane and her success. And and he's just like, Jaqen's like, oh, I can't tell you that. I can't tell you that you're correct. But Arya obviously knows. So yeah, that's that. I suppose I'll do Night's Watch, but I will want to butt in at some point during Beyond the Wall.
Totally understand. I might butt in some with Night's Watch. You never know. Keep going.
We're just crazy like that. Night's Watch, Sansa is sewing something. We will see it later. And gets a raven from Littlefinger to meet in Mole's town. She meets him with Brienne as her guard. And she asks if he knew about Ramsay. If not, he's an idiot. And if so, he's her enemy. And so,
at least she says it.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. And she basically asks, hey, what do you think that he did to me? Just curious, what do you think he did? And he's like, did he beat you? And she's like, oh yeah, he liked that. What else? And then he starts naming some horrible things. And she's like, yeah, no, he kept my face because my face was the key to the North. And literally any part that didn't have anything to do with having an heir, he did what he liked. And then he basically says, I'm at your mercy. I will do whatever you want. Even if you want me to be struck down by Brienne right now, I will let you do that, obviously, because first of all, you can't stop Brienne, but second of all, because
I'd love to see a little figure in a sword fight. Wouldn't you? It'd be fucking hilarious.
I mean, I'll talk about this in Beyond the Wall. Anyway, I'll say it now so I don't forget. What I hoped to see in Beyond the Wall, like with the Brand visions, is I like certain things that we see in there. But I feel like it would have been a great opportunity to see what has already happened that we have heard about. We didn't really need to see I'm glad we did see like an afternoon in Winterfell before Ned went to the Vale to work with Jon Arryn. But I wish that we also got to see like young Littlefinger vying for Catelyn's heart or whatever, or something like that. I mean, obviously there are like a lot of possibilities with that, but I don't know. It would have been nice to see other things that we had already heard about, but c'est la vie. Anyway, he says he's at her mercy, and he also mentions that the Blackfish has retaken River Run, and he might be helpful to supply an army. And she's like, I already have an army. And he's like, no, that's your half-brother's army, you mean. Like, the one that's not necessarily loyal to you, but loyal to Jon. Right? And she initially didn't see it as a problem, but now she's kind of concerned about where the allegiances of the army lie, and also they don't have many people. Anyway, later on they have, what?
Well, before we move on, I just want to say this. One of the things she says to him is that, I remember it struck me at the time, like she can still feel the things that inside her, and she's like, and I'm not talking about in my tender heart. You know, she is exacting with Littlefinger in a way that we've never seen her before, and I really like that she's finally just had enough. So
I agree. When we first heard that, I assumed that she was pregnant, but she's not. Spoiler alert: she's not.
No, I which thank God. That much damage, like she couldn't be or something. I was thinking like he like.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. But stuff. I'm glad she wasn't pregnant in that moment. Anyway, later on they have a strategy meeting about which remaining northern houses they could ally with. It's a lot of smaller northern houses that don't have too many men, but if you gather if you like start from the little ones and build, you will have more of an opportunity to talk to the bigger houses, and maybe they will see that you see you as a winning side. Sansa wants to use the Stark name, and she says Jon is on the same level as Ramsay is as far as blood is concerned, so she that shouldn't be an issue of like, hey, you're technically a Stark, you're as much of a Stark as Ramsay is a Bolton, so I don't see why it would be an issue with these northern houses with using the name Stark. Also, she tells them about the Tully's retaking River Run. She lies about how she knows the information, which Brienne will briefly mention at some point, but she, for whatever reason, she's just like, oh, Ramsay got a scroll, a raven, yeah, that's how I know, instead of, oh yeah, I met with Littlefinger the other day, even though I don't see how that is a bad thing in anyone's eyes, because Jon doesn't know Littlefinger at all, so
right, she doesn't
it
know
wouldn't mean anything to him.
Right. But it means a lot to us, but you know.
It means a lot to us, but not to necessarily to Jon. Then Sansa is sending Brienne to River Run to talk to the Blackfish on her behalf. Brienne is concerned about going, but Sansa's like, no, I trust Jon. He will keep me safe. And she's like, I trust you with Jon. I don't trust you with, like, that awful wildling fellow or Davos and Melisandre or all those people, but I do trust you with Jon. She mentions that Jon is a bit brooding perhaps, but at least he's honorable. Brienne asks Sansa why she lied to him if Sansa really trusts Jon, and she does not have an answer for her, and that's concerning. Sansa, the next day, everyone's kind of going on their own way, and Sansa made a dress for herself with a wolf sigil on it, and she also made Jon a coat that, like, Ned used to wear, the best she can remember, with also, like, a wolf sigil on, like, one of the straps that goes across. And Tormund is making eyes at Brienne again. Jon says goodbye to Ed. Once they leave, like, one of the Night's Watchmen come back and to Ed and is like, hey, should we close the gate, Lord Commander? And Ed's like, no, I'm not the Lord Commander. Oh, wait, I am the Lord Commander. Yeah, close the fucking gate. And I love Ed. I love him so much. It's so funny.
I love both of them. When I was doing it, it's a visual, obviously, but you used to do something crazy, like,
I know. Smolder.
And I'm thinking, like, Truman's trying to smolder in my head. This is hilarious. So funny.
For those listening, it's the thing from Tangled that I would fuck up and to make myself look like I was having a seizure. And so don't worry about it. Use your imagination if you don't already know.
Exactly. I'm sorry. You were saying.
No, that was it.
That is it. So we saved Beyond the Wall because this is really just the guts of this episode. And it begins with Bran seeing these children of the forest that we've met. You can tell that it's in the before times because it's at this heart tree or the godswood tree where they are now living underneath it. But there's no snow, it's green, there's standing stones in this circular pattern that we've seen the circular pattern numerous times. And that has been usually with maimed bodies that the White Walkers have done with the parts. But the children have a man who is tied to, I believe, the tree. Mm-hmm. And they stab him in the heart and he becomes the Night King.
Stab him in the heart with dragon glass.
With dragon glass, I apologize. And he becomes
that's the important bit right there.
Yeah. And he becomes the Night King. His eyes turn blue and all of those things. And Bran comes too and he confronts this child of the forest that's been hanging out with them, kind of the leader of the group. She was
I'm so sorry. I misheard you and I thought you said child of divorce.
Mommy and daddy are fighting. It's something like that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the reason why they made the White Walkers in the first place.
Right, they were at war, and that's what she explained. She's like, look, we thought we had to defend ourselves because they were taking like all the trees, they were killing everything, you know, we were trying to defend ourselves from humans. Later on, the three-eyed raven old guy is asleep, so Bran is like, hey, I want to have another vision, I want to take a look at some shit.
I need to take some shrooms.
Yeah, or something, or have
give me
some
the
absinthe, which I didn't have, but you know, something like that. So he touches the tree, and he has a vision that is not really a vision. It's a lot more concrete than that. It's a lot more real. And he is outside of the tree. It's in the snow. There is the army of the dead. And Bran, because every time he's gone with the three-eyed raven into these visions, he's been safe. Like, no one can see him, all those things. But he walks through this army of the dead, and behind the army are the generals and the Night King on their creepy horses. And you know, no one in the army moves as Bran passes through, so he's thinking, they can't see me, I'm all good. And he's feeling like he's safe. But the Night King, you know, Bran starts to realize he's surrounded, he turns and is kind of panicked, and the Night King grabs him on the arm, and he can feel it. And obviously the Night King can see him. Yes.
First, that brings him out of the vision, but this is what I wrote down in all caps. What does this mean? And then it just, did he reach the end of his vision minutes? Is it just a Night King thing? Where did the Night King touch you, Bran? And so I, sorry.
It was a bad touch, I can tell you that.
Bad touch. I just... What, like, why was the, I guess the only difference between this vision and other visions is that the three-eyed raven wasn't with him, and so I guess that had an effect, but like, he wasn't in it. I think what they were going for was that he was in it too long, and then he kind of became part of the environment, and then so the Night King could touch him. But how long was he in there?
I wasn't clear on that, so you know, it seemed to me that that was a possibility. The other possibility being that in the other visions, the people are dead, so he's kind of like a ghost, you know, like in all of these, you know, things that we've seen before, where like Christmas Carol and all of that, where they go back and everybody else is kind of deceased and they can't see you, and so it's kind of like you're a shadow or a ghost. Mm-hmm. There, and because it's an army of the dead, and the Night King is the dead, that he could see him. But
it's a possibility.
There's something about the magic that's involved, I think. And I think,
oh, you know, for sure.
It might be because the Night King was turned at that tree. Who knows? I don't know. Might have to do with the standing stones that we can't see. Fucking don't know. But the bottom line is the touch. The fact that the Night King actually touched Bran. Mm-hmm. Means that the magic that was protecting them under that tree is gone. And so the three-eyed raven's like, you got to go. You got to go. You got to go. You got to go. And so there is this series, and it seems really kind of fucked up and weird. So everyone else is getting ready. Like, you know, Mira's trying to get everything ready. She's talking to Hodor.
Sorry, before that happens, there's a really funny sequence where, like, Bran is like, yeah, no, he touched me, and the Three-Eyed Raven's like, or no, he's like, oh yeah, he saw you, he saw me, and it's like, he touched you, and then he's like, oh yeah, no, you need to become me now, and Bran's like, am I ready? And then he's like, no. I found that so funny.
Yeah, and
sorry,
so
go ahead.
Because part of what's going on, Bran, rather than, well, not that he could physically do much to get ready, Bran is having all of this information from the three-eyed raven kind of uploaded into his brain, or into the brain cloud, or whatever it is that they share.
it is the vision he's in is just a mundane day of like Ned leaving for the Vale, and so I'm like, why is this so important that he needs to see this right now, Three-Eyed Raven?
Well, it is
important. We find out later why.
We find out later in this episode why. But while that's going on, Mira's like, hey, we get to go home now, and she's talking to Hodor about, oh, what kind of food do you want? Oh, you want eggs? And Hodor's like, Hodor? Yeah, that sounds good. And I I love this whole sequence so much. They hear the army gathering outside, and the Night King is there with his generals, and this is all kind of intercut. His magic is able to like penetrate to the trees. So the children of the forest, they're like, what, five, six of them left?
I didn't even know there weren't that many left, if I'm being honest. We only saw the one, and so I was just like, oh, she's the only one. It's like, oh, nope, there are more.
But not many. So they try to defend, and they have these kind of like bombs or something.
Fairy bombs.
Yeah, so they make us kind of like a perimeter of fire bombs, thinking that at least we'll slow them down. The whites can't get through them, but the generals and the Night King can. And Mira is at this point realizing they're coming in. We've got to go. She's trying to wake Bran. Bran won't wake up because Bran is in this vision. And he's watching young Ned at Winterfell. We see the Night King walking through the fire, and the whites begin to swarm up the tree, and like they're trying to penetrate into this area under the roots. Mira puts Bran in the wagon. I mean, this woman is super strong. I can't say enough good things about Mira.
I love Mira so much.
Yeah, Ned's dad tells him, look, if you have to fight, you know, don't pick fights, but if you have to fight, win.
Good advice, Dad.
win
every fight. That's it.
And, right. And we see Hodor in the present timeline is rocking, and you know, he's getting really anxious because he knows the whites are coming. And Mare's like, we're all going to die here. We need Hodor. And you see Bran in the flashback.
Before we get this far, I would like to also point out something actually Sophie brought up to me when we were watching it, my roommate Sophie, when they're Mira and Hodor, and I'm sorry if you've already mentioned this, but when Mira and Hodor were talking, they started being able to see their breath, and that's what signified the White Walkers were coming.
I didn't
think about that, but Sophie was like, oh, they can see their breath, the White Walkers are coming. I was like, oh god, yeah, you're right.
I think I noticed it like the first time I saw this, but I become very, very focused on,
I thought it was like a noise or something that they noticed, but it wasn't, it was the fact that they were getting cold.
Yeah,
like a Dementor. So,
yes, Dementors are coming. So in the past timeline, in the flashback, Bran looks over at Willis, who is acting fairly normal, but then falls to the ground in what appears to be a seizure. An old man in the flashback is kind of going up to him, trying to figure out what's going on. And at around that point, Bran wargs into Hodor in the present timeline, and they are running out. Or trying to run out. Mira's dragging him. Hodor's trying to drag him. And there is only one of the children left, the main one that we've seen. And the whites are just swarming. It is terrifying. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Have we mentioned Summer?
Do we have Summer?
I'll talk about it. So the whites, like, this is kind of like in a weird order, but Summer is there. Finally, we see her, him. I don't know. It doesn't Summer. Matter. Summer. Summer is Summer. And so they are packing up and they're about to leave. Like, Mira at one point uses a dragonglass spear and like gets one of the generals, which is really badass. Good for you, Mira.
Totally badass.
You are one of three people in this show that has done this thus far. Good for you, girl. You deserve it. Snaps for you.
Yeah.
Either way. So then Mira gets Bran and is dragging him away. There, I find it hilarious, first of all, that there is a door in the first place to this magical cave in a tree. But when they're running away, the whites swarm into the cave and they swarm Summer and kill Summer. It's really, really sad. And then they're running through the cave like you said, but they're like on all sides. They're like even on like top of the cave, like Spider-Man. Like they're just on every single possible surface that you can see. It is terrifying. Yeah, while Mira and Hodor and Gwen are running.
Yeah, the sound is like like bugs swarming or something. It's like it's all these legs. Oh, it's horrible. But what happens to Summer, of course, is trying to defend them and like slow things down and defend Bran and all that stuff. It's really awful.
I'd also like to say that in the vision, Bran hears Mira saying, "We're all going to die. You have to work into Hodor." And the Three-Eyed Raven's like, "Do what your friend says, warg into Hodor." And so, again, this is a new power we didn't know he had. He can warg into Hodor within a vision, which, wow.
Right.
But yeah, we're now caught up. Okay, go ahead.
Yes.
Summer needed her, his, their due.
Yes. Summer, I'm grateful that you brought up Summer because I probably didn't want to talk about it because it's upsetting. But there's a bunch of stuff that upsets me that I am going to have to talk about. But the whites really are swarming. The child tells Mira, "You got to go," because Mira's trying to slow down and make sure that this child of the horse goes with them. And she's like, "You've got to go." And so the child then, activates the last bomb she's got left. And the whites swarm over her and they're completely over her. When the bomb goes off and she blows up basically as many as she can, they get to this door to the outside and Hodor is having trouble pushing it open. And Mira's like, "Come on, we gotta get it. And so he opens the door.
Oh, sorry. Another thing. Have we mentioned the Three-Eyed Raven?
Oh yeah.
All right. I'll fill this in. This is why I'm here.
I'm very focused on one specific.
I understand that, and it is very important, and you will get to it. But first and foremost, the Three-Eyed Raven, is still in the tree, obviously, and the Night King comes through with his generals, standing guard or whatever. And the Night King is just like so sick of this guy's shit, and just decides to kill him, and so he slices him through. But before he does that, in the vision, the Three-Eyed Raven's still in the vision with Bran, and he's like, "Hey, it's time for me to go. Goodbye, Brandon." And he just kind of disappears in a black inky blob, kind of feather-like thing, what is it called? Not the Mirror Verisad, the
Voldemort guy.
No, kind of, but no, it's the other thing, the inky blotchiness going into the Pensieve. That's what I'm going for.
There are elements of the whole Three-Eyed Raven experiences, much like the Pensieve too.
The Three-Eyed Raven,
it's not just one person's memories, it's just multiple people.
Very similar, yeah. But either way, yeah, that's the Three-Eyed Raven. Now we'll get to the door.
Right. So Hodor's finally able, because there's a bunch of snow and ice and crap, and he's having trouble getting the door open. But he's able to get the door open enough that the three of them get through with the little wagon. And Mira is, she's trying to run off, and she tells him to hold the door. And in the flashback, Willis collapses and he's in this seizure. And you see Bran, this is just so heartbreaking. It's so beautifully done. And you hear him saying, Willis in the flashback, saying, "Hold the door, hold the door." And that language deteriorates into Hodor, Hodor, Hodor. And Mira's running and still saying, "Hold the door, hold the door." And she's running off. And Bran both in the flashback and in the present timeline, sees the whites overtake him and eat him, and that his mind is basically gone.
I will say I was under the impression that Willis actually saw Bran and then he collapsed.
That's possible.
That was my impression. But either way, yeah, he says hold the door until it deteriorates to Hodor, and I nearly cried again.
I cry every time. This is so heartbreaking to me.
It was for a different reason this time, mostly because I felt like they were abandoning him.
Yeah.
And it felt even worse. And they didn't want to. And Mira didn't want to. And it's not like he volunteered himself. He was like being warged into by Bran until he wasn't. I think there's a moment where he wasn't and he just kind of like did it to save them. It's very sad.
Well, right. I think probably toward the end, as they're running away from him, Bran has to leave him. And I think that's part of, you know, he's not in him, you know, helping him have the strength or be focused or whatever anymore.
Yeah.
And that's part of the brain deterioration that happens. And it really is just heartbreaking. It really is. So what were your best parts of this episode?
Hodor, obviously. Summer, rest in power. Mira, badass bitch, get things done. Sansa for standing up to Littlefinger, but I'm also kind of disappointed that she didn't like kill him, but hey, maybe he can be an ally, I don't know. Euron's energy, I love it. It is so like perfect. Him just be like, yeah, I killed my brother and what else. And the recap play, I love the recap play because it's a great way of Arya getting up to speed on what's been going on without like her being having to like meet up with somebody she knows and like talk about it. So it's, but she also like knows to take everything with a grain of salt, but it, because she was there for like the first little bit of it, but also her seeing what other people, how other people saw her father and having to see the decapitation again, farcical way, but she takes it very seriously and she, you can see it in her face. Ed's hilarious. I love Ed. The acting, especially for whatever reason, among other things, the thing that really broke me was Isaac Hempstead Wright's face looking at poor little young Willis like collapsed on the ground having a seizure until he starts yelling Hodor and realizing that this was the reason, he's the reason why he used to be able to have a normal life and now he's just deteriorated to this. And it's very, very sad. Tears, and Jorah, I guess. Jorah's kind of a question mark for me because, I mean, again, why do you care so much about Daenerys? But I appreciate his loyalty and him like having a renewed sense of maybe a little bit of hope that maybe this will work out. Maybe he will be able to find a cure. He will fight for her. And now that she believes in him and wants him by her side, maybe now he will get the chance to live a full life. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna kind of pick up because of course the big storyline to me is Hodor, and this performance of course is fabulous in both timelines, just beautifully done. And considering you only have like minimal words to work with, you know, you think about having to do this performance both as the young actor and as the adult actor. It's really, you know, just incredible how well it's done. I agree with you. Isaac Hempstead writes. Face as he's, and that realization that Hodor and the reason that he is so single-minded is his whole function is life in life is basically to take care of Bran. And yeah, that's,
don't you feel fucking guilty?
Yeah, you fucking should. And so, yeah, so Hodor's fabulous. Mira, I think she is badass and she's wonderful. I love Bran in this, honestly. That realization, you know, both that like this whole world, the whole Night King thing, it's like, we're responsible for this shit. Are you serious? And am I ready? I mean, that self-awareness of, oh my God, I'm not ready for this and people are dying for me. So I can do this.
I will say this is the best the Bran storyline has ever been or ever will be, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's probably ever will
this
be.
This is too, the peak, so, yeah. Y'all. This is the peak.
Yeah, it is really fabulous. Brienne, I think, is great in this.
I agree. Yeah, Brienne, sorry.
Yeah, she's great. Oh, and
Podrick is technically there.
Sansa, I think, you know, again, I'm so excited that she's finally like growing a pair. This is great. I love Arya. I love the fact that she's got a conscience, and that it's one of those things I thought about when they pointed out to her, when Jockin points out to her that no one's ever been a lord or a lady, they've just been like these nobody people, they're I am no one kind of thing. I think, you know, part of what we see, the identity that Arya brings to this also comes from having a family and a moral compass and a, you know, is this right or is this wrong? She's had that luxury of being able to really think about the decisions that you make and the choices that you make. She doesn't just take orders. She's like, wait a minute, is this right? And I think that that comes a little bit from not being just so desperate that, you know, you want need a house over your head and you need food and whatever. She's got, you know, kind of a little bit more of a very direct, a very structured moral world, whereas I don't think that the moral part of it really comes into play for some of the other people.
Yeah, I also think that it's interesting how she came back after being blind for weeks, I don't know, days, I don't know, a while. What the days she's spent blind, I love that her conscience has built up since then, and how it for some people it would have hardened their morals a little bit more and been like, oh, it's a dog eat dog world, I'm not gonna get eaten or whatever. But her morals are just like, I see the good in people when they gave me that money or they did something kind for me even though they don't even know me. So right. I think that that's part of what she has noticed, is that there is some kindness in the world. And she doesn't want to ruin that. She sees a little bit of it in Lady Crane and just her humanity. And she doesn't want to take that out of the world yet or ever, really. But now that she's given a task to do, she also has a lot of fear of what will happen if she doesn't. And she knows there are consequences now, and this is her last chance before she gets killed. So it's a complicated. It's complicated. I don't know why I did it with like an Italian accent. It's complicated.
It's complicated. Complicated. I love Yara and Theon in this. I like Theon kind of like standing up for her.
Oh, I agree. Theon's great.
I think he's good. I loved Jorah in this. Daenerys is okay. She's not good, but she's okay. But
she's those still are self-centered. She's like, heal yourself for me, not for yourself.
The fact that she actually acknowledges that she needs Jorah is a big concession for her. So whatever. I mean, she does it in her dumbass egotistical way, but she acknowledges it. So what were your worst parts?
Hodor's death, Summer's death, Littlefinger, and White's. White's, like, and again, whenever I say White's, it sounds bad, but you know what I mean? But it's just that tunnel shot, just,
oh God, it's so creepy.
So scary. Creepy. I hate it.
Littlefinger, I agree.
Oh, I'd also like to say the forest fairies are a best part, because they really hold their own, and they take responsibility for what they created, and they try to take it out as best they can. So forest fairies...
I had the child written down. I just didn't say it, and I should have. But I, you know, they're a best part and a worst part, because they also created these fucking White Walkers. So
that's true. But yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah. So Euron, I think, is a worst part. I know you like his energy, and I like his energy too. He definitely has swagger, but I don't like him.
Oh, sure. I don't like him. I like his... Oh, I think... Yeah, no, I did leave him off, didn't I? Yeah, Euron is also a worse part, but, like, he... Again, his energy, top-notch.
Yeah. Night King... He's one of those love-hate kind of things, too, but he's a hate on this one for sure. White Walkers...
He's included in the Whites for me. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the White Walkers are the Whites. Fucking terrifying. So that's pretty much it. What grade did you give this episode?
A-. It's great.
Did you really?
I'm actually kind of tempted to go an A because it's a very good episode, honestly, all around. I didn't really have too many complaints about this episode, if I'm being honest.
Interesting. So I gave it a B plus.
I
And
think
I
I'll
think
stick with an A minus though. Sorry, go
it's
ahead.
fine. It's totally fine. I gave it a B plus. I think part of my grading here is because I know what's coming. And
That
I
doesn't mean to score
know.
it lower.
Hey, no, it does though, because you gotta have a scale, right? And in the scale, this is a really good episode, but it is not as amazing as Some to Come. That's all I
But
have
we
to say.
can always score those higher, Mother. That's the
Okay,
plan.
let's go on. Let us go on and find sections for season six, episode six, Blood of My Blood.
Blood.
Sorry, Blood of My Blood. Get
Sorry.
going.
What'd you call me?
Blood of My Blood.
Oh, I thought you said Voldemort. I was so concerned for a second.
What
I
show
just,
are we watching?
well, I thought you also, there was a possibility you said Dracula because I just went blood. And so anyway,
Move on, move on.
the sections are Dothraki, King's Landing, Hornhill, Braavos, Beyond the Wall, and the Twins. Let's start with the Twins.
Yeah,
Walder Frey is upset with his sons for losing Riverrun. He says to take it back, but they don't have the men. Sorry. In my notes, I accidentally said they don't have the knee. I meant men.
I'm
Not that
doing
anyone
better.
else would know that. Anyway. They don't have the me, that is correct. But so they bring Edmure in to be used as bait to lure out the Blackfish and make them be able to take back River Run.
Can I give you what I called him? Bad hair Edmure.
I mean, you're not wrong. He also
I'm
has that
not.
weird stank face on like his face that entire time. He's just kind of like, ooh.
He's not had good hair at this entire show, but this is
That's so
exceptionally
true. I
bad
feel
hair.
so bad.
It's
I
so
feel
bad.
so bad for Tobias Menzies, you poor man.
Oh.
He's been in a dungeon for the past, what, 3 years?
It's sad. It's just sad.
Anyway, that's
Anyway.
the twins. Where you want to
Yes.
go? King's Land?
Let's
No.
see.
Do Beyond the Wall. No. Yes. Oh,
What
no.
do
Do Dothraki. Do Dothraki. Do
Yeah, the Dothraki
Dothraki.
is super boring. So they are on the road to Meereen, and it's supposed to take another week. And she has a chat, Dany has a chat with Dario about like how many ships would we need to sail to Westeros? And he's like, well, I don't know, like 1,000. Because they got
I
all these
don't
people.
know, a million.
Oh, 1,000. And
I
she's like, I'm going to take what is mine. And
don't
what he says to her
know.
is like, you're not made to sit on a chair. You're a conqueror. You're not made to like actually rule anywhere. You're just made.
I mean, I love that. I love that because it's so true.
It is. You're right. Yes. And we see that, but whatever. So Danny says, like, hey, wait here. And she rides off on her horse, and they're all hanging around for a really, really, really long time.
I'd like to
Then
think that
you
it's
hear.
been hours.
Then you hear dragon screeching. And there she rides in on Drogon.
I made a noise. If it comes up on the recording, I am so sorry. No, I
That was bad. I'm sorry. All right. So I'm just thinking like the blue screen, the green screen department or whatever are just getting better and better at making big dragons. So Drogon's really, really big. And Drogon lands on a mountain, and Dany gives a speech that I'm sure no one could actually hear, but whatever, about hey.
I feel like I've seen like a random video of people like taking out like making it actually sound realistic because that's what people like to do. So you hear like footsteps or you hear like horse neighs or whatever, and it's just her going, whoa, 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 whoa. I
Yes,
feel like I've seen it
yada yada, whatever. Like I'm saying that because I don't know the
before.
Dothraki language. Yeah,
Yaddy, yay!
so she there's a lot of there's a big speech, motivational speech in Dothraki about your blood of my blood, come be my Khalasar, we're going to take the Seven Kingdoms, blah, blah, blah. And we have Dragon Screech ending number, what, six?
Six.
Six, right. I mean, it's not the ending of our episode, but it is the ending of the episode. So there you go.
Where should we go next?
Beyond the Wall? Or
sure. Or Mira is struggling to drag Bran all the way back down south. Surprise. Bran is having simultaneous visions of the Mad King, Rob. Yes! But it's of him being stabbed. So, I mean, that's not fun. But you get to see him and the Army of the Dead. Mira gives up, but Bran wakes up just to tell her that the whites have found them. Great timing, Bran. And she like hugs him close and says she's very sorry because she literally can't do anything else anymore. Like, and they cannot fight off all the whites. And so then the whites are closing in, but are stopped by a random guy on a horse, headless horseman style. And he has like this jack-o'-lantern type shit, like throwing fireballs like around like, on a chain, like a fireball on a chain, like whacking through the whites. And he's like, come with me if you want to live. And they're like, okay, it's our only shot, so might as well. Later on, they have made camp and the guy, mentions well, first of all, he's like, he's killed a rabbit and like just draining the rabbit's blood into a cup, which he gives like to Bran later, which is disgusting.
Yeah,
but I mean, gotta drink something. You gotta drink something. Not gonna judge, I suppose. Vampire looking ass. Anyway, then the guy said that the Three-Eyed Raven sent for him, and well, now there's a new one, and obviously it's Bran, but. The guy, you'll never guess, because I certainly didn't, it's Benjen, it's Uncle Benjen. Remember him from season one, episodes one and two? No, neither did I. But yeah, well, initially, when I first watched this, like, Sophie was like, hey, I was like, yeah, no, this is a guy from before, and she's, before you watched, and she's like, well, did you guess who it was? And I was like, oh, fuck no, I thought he was dead. And no. I mean, he kind of is. So here's the thing. He tells his backstory about how he went beyond the wall with his raiding party, and they got cornered by the White Walkers, and they killed all the other guys, but he got stabbed with a sword of ice, and they just kind of left him to wait for him to turn into like a White Walker, like a full on White Walker, I suppose. He was going to be turned into a general. And but the children found him, and they stopped his transition by plunging a shard of dragon glass into his heart, kind of like how they created the White Walkers in the first place. So he's kind of like a half White Walker, half not. Like, it's very unclear about what his status is as far as dead or alive, but who cares, he's here and he's helping out. And I wrote, is he drinking rabbit blood? So,
yes, he is.
They're relieved that he is there helping him, and he will be helpful. Yes. That's all I got.
He says one other thing about you've got to learn how to control being a three-eyed raven, because Bran.
And I was like, yeah, no shit.
Because Bran's really like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. He's like, you've got to do it because you got to do it before the Night King comes, because it's really, really bad.
Yeah, no kidding. Bravos?
Bravos.
Bravos.
Bravos. We're going to Bravos. We're seeing another scene of the play. It shows Joffrey's death, and Arya thinks it's hilarious, and so do I. So then Lady Crane does a really good sad Cersei performance, as far as, you know, sad Cersei performances go. The young actress is... she's clearly very jealous. She's in the wings trying to like say the lines. You can see her.
She's mouthing them. And I would like to say I haven't done that, but I'm not gonna lie to y'all. I didn't try to kill them.
No.
I was just jealous. But I would always concede when they would have done it better. So
yes. So
or they do it better.
Arya goes in and puts the poison in the rum like she's supposed to. And you know, you can tell that she's got misgivings about it, but she does what she's supposed to do. And Lady Crane comes in and they're talking, And she asks Arya if she wants to be an actress. And Arya says, you know, that you're really good. I think Cersei, the queen, would probably be more than just sad. She would also be angry because someone just killed their child. And she's like, Lady Cream basically like, I don't rate this shit. I just do what I can. And she kind of nods over at the guy who had been the art critic on Downton Abbey, because he clearly is the writer. Arya then leaves, and shortly thereafter, Arya comes back and knocks the glass of rum before Lady Cream can take a sip of it out of her hand. She points at the younger actress and says, be careful of that one. She wants you dead. The waif, who has another face on apparently, sees all of this. And she's like, aha. So Arya goes, she realizes that, you know, look, they're going to know. And she goes and retrieves Needle from where she had hidden Needle by the docks. And she goes and finds, I guess there's a little room, cave, something that she's going to keep her stuff in until she's able to actually get out of town. So the waif then reports to Jaqen, and I had forgotten some of this. I'm just going to say it up front. I had forgotten the Jaqen's role at this point, but she's like, well, it's too bad.
Letting her go after Arya? Yeah,
not just letting her, like ordering it. So
no, she really wants to do it. She doesn't need to be ordered.
Well, right. She wants to do it. She had been holding off because Jaqen told her to hold off. But he's like, don't cut your hands in the process, because he knows what she's going to do.
No, he says, don't make her suffer.
I heard it differently this time when I was listening to it. So I don't know.
No, but I wrote down that just do not let her suffer.
And because he is kind of sad, like, you know, Arya had some gifts. Oh, well. And so the waif is like, all right, it's my time now. And that is Braavos.
Yep.
Hornhill or King's Landing?
I'll do Hornhill. You get the boring shit.
I know. You want McLaggen. That's what this is all about.
Shh. Gilly is on her stupid shit again. She's like, it's so green. Anyway, they're on their way to Hornhill. They're in a carriage. Sam needs to stop it with the trees. He keeps like rambling about how like the different kinds of trees, and it reminded me of the Monty Python sketch, the poplar. Sam is nervous about meeting with his father, and he's decided that they will lie and say little Sam is his son. And also he mentions to Gilly that he has not told his family that she is a wildling, because he says that would ruin the chances of her being able to stay there, because his father is an awful person. They come in. Sam's mom and Sam's sister are very sweet. They instantly take in all of the information he has disputed them, and are like, oh my gosh, this is your child. Oh my gosh, this is your, I guess, wife. I don't know. Oh my gosh, you're so pretty. Great. Awesome. You want a dress? Awesome. Great. It's really sweet. Gilly is dressed up in a pretty dress and took a bath and found a curler. And so she looks great. And they go to dinner. And it's the prince from Bridgerton and Cormac
yes.
McLaggen.
And
he's playing Dickon.
And you love him.
I do. Randall, the father, sorry, I wrote down they measure their hunting ducks. I meant dicks. And also they're basically comparing about how they hunt like game down in Hornhill compared to hunting squirrels up north. And yeah, they measure their hunting ducks.
I would point out as well that if you're hunting with a bow, it is much harder to hit like small rodents than it is.
Oh,
to
for
hit
sure. For sure. Yeah. Randall's super rude to Sam about not being a man, a real man, even though being a maester is a big ass deal, but fine. Gilly says he killed a White Walker and a Thenn, and reveals that she is a wildling. Then Randall, in a fit of rage, busts out some exposition about their family sword being Valyrian steel and how he'll never get it, and points it out on the wall too. It's very obviously what they're helpful trying to do. That helpful Valyrian steel sword on the wall over there will never be yours. It's like, okay. Anyway, the ladies save the day and get Gilly out of the situation while Randall's like, yeah, no, we'll take her in. She'll work in the kitchens. The baby will be raised here, but you will never, ever come back here. Father of the year. Sam says goodbye and is about to leave, but comes back and takes the Valyrian steel sword and takes Gilly and little Sam to Old Town with him. There's some really funny lines in here where he says, get your things. And then Gilly's like, I don't have any things. And there's also another one where Gilly's feeling apprehensive about taking the dress that she's wearing with them. And she's like, this is your sister's dress. And Sam's like, she won't mind. Looks better on you anyway.
Oh, I love that so much.
It's so funny. Anyway, that's that. All right, King's Landing, mama.
King's Landing. Oh, wow. So
there's not much to talk about, to be fair.
There isn't. There's a lot of fuck shit with the High Sparrow. So the High Sparrow says that Margaery needs to do a Walk of Atonement. He's talking to Tommen, and he lets Tommen see Margaery. They hug. The High Sparrow, Margaery is like, fully.
Sorry, me and Sophie also pointed out how amazing her hair looks.
Oh God, yeah, for somebody who's imprisoned, but she has been let have free reign at this point since she's agreed and confessed.
But that shouldn't mean a fresh blowout, I will
it
say.
It should not, but she looks really good. And so
even in a fucking sack, Natalie Dormer looks amazing.
Yeah, she does.
And she is wearing a sack.
Literally. But Margaery, she's very much playing the game at this point. She knows what the High Sparrow is. She knows what she's supposed to say. She's very careful about what she says, because she's like, I spent lots of time seeming to be good, but all of the things I was doing were lies, because I didn't really love the poor, blah, blah, blah. And she tells Tommen, oh, the High Sparrow is not what we thought he was. And Loras needs to atone for his sins also, and the gods have a plan. I mean, she's spouting the party line like she's supposed to, but she does it in a sincere enough way. This is a great acting performance by Natalie Dormer, honestly.
Acting like she's acting, yep. That's my favorite thing.
Right, there's that undertone of, get me the fuck out of here, oh my God. So the Tyrell army comes into the area of the Sept. This is later. Mace is in a suit of armor, which is hilarious. He gives a pretentious speech that no one pays attention to. The High Sparrow is on the steps with Margaery and Septa and Anella, and Jaime brings in the army, and kind of even though the Lannister army is kind of told to stand down, he rides up on the steps on his horse, and the High Sparrow is like, oh, well, yeah, we don't need to do a Walk of Atonement for Margaery because Margaery's brought someone else into the fold, and ta-da, it's Tommen.
And I'm sorry, that was an option?
Yeah,
this fucking when was that an option?
I don't know, but they all realize, being Jaime and Mace, well, not Mace, because he has to have it explained to him, that they have been outmaneuvered. And with Tommen being in the fold, they are not going to be able to get around the High Sparrow the way they had hoped to. So because of Jamie's behavior, I wrote this down too, Tommen gives this idiotic speech. You hear the Baratheon theme?
I'd also like to say that Tommen needs to stop every speech starting with the crown and the faith are the twin pillars that hold this kingdom together. He says that at least 5 times. He can make it a drinking game and get fucked up.
Right. But because he is a child and easily manipulated, and it shows how easily manipulated he is. But the Baratheon theme is playing while he gives his idiotic speech. Jaime is fired from the Kingsguard because he is seen as having attacked the faith. that he is going to be allowed to lead the Lannister army and go to the Riverlands and get Riverrun back. And you know, it's fascinating because Jaime goes to see Cersei before he leaves. And he says, he sounds so much like Tywin in this speech with Cersei. He's like, they stole our son. We need to get our son back. And he's got that same sort of, you know, Lannister feel to him. Cersei wants Jaime to head the Lannister army. He's like, I can't leave you here. But she's like, I've got mountains done. I'm cool. I'm going to be fine.
I mean, to be fair, that is true. That is true.
And you know, they're like, oh, we'll always be together. We're the only two people in the world. Your favorite line.
Twincess. Blah.
Twincess. But you see how into the twincess Jaime is. Because occasionally you get these glimmers of, maybe Jaime's not that bad. No, he's that
glimmers
bad.
Of hope, and then your dreams are dashed.
Exactly. Much like their dreams were dashed with Tommen being a pillar of the faith and shit. So
he doesn't have a pillar, Mom. That's why he's doing all this built bullshit.
Totally fair. So what were your best parts?
Rob in the recap and in the visions. Rob. We haven't seen you since season 3, dude. I missed you, buddy.
Richard Madden, we love you.
We love you. we sound like an awful fan club. Uncle Benjen for doing his shit and randomly coming back to life, kind of. Dickon, we love to see the prince and McLagan.
No, that's
and I really love that his name is Dickon. It is hilarious. He will get replaced with a different actor that we are also familiar with from Umbrella Academy.
Yes.
But that's next season's problem. Or eighth season's problem. Doesn't matter. The Blackfish. Oh, Blackfish isn't even in this. I love his energy, though, of like taking back River Run. But the Blackfish is not in this episode.
No.
Sam's mother and sister, they're great. The recap play, as always, hilarious. Well, not hilarious in the writing of the play, but hilarious in the presentation. Arya for standing up for what's right and saving Lady Crane's life, but also putting it in danger, but also undoing it. You know what I mean? Podrick is there, and Dario for pointing out that Daenerys is a conqueror and not a good ruler.
I did not give props to Dario, and I really should. So my best parts, Benjen, I was so super excited to see Benjen. That was great. I love Mira because Mira kicks ass and she's like,
oh yeah, Mira.
I love her being like, oh my god, I'm so sorry, I can't drag you any further, you know, whatever. That just that sense of fear again, it's a really great performance. Sam, I love, because you know, he kind of grows a pair here. I have a question mark by Jaime. I like this part.
Oh yeah, Sam.
I like this part initially where he's like on the horse and he's like gonna, you know, take on the High Sparrow, but then he's like turns into Twincess guy. My hopes are that.
Yeah, I can't say I love that.
No, I don't either. But Arya, I love. I just feel like everything about that is good. What were your worst parts?
Randall Tarly is an absolute jackass.
Did you point out who he is?
I did not.
From Downton Abbey, he's Lord Cinderby.
Yeah, he is Lord Cinderby. Sorry. Yeah, he's Lord Cinderby.
Another bad dad.
He plays a lot of bad dads. I completely forgot he was Lord Cinderby for a second, and I looked at him and I was like, I know you. And I know I'm supposed to know you. Are you another Downton Abbey guy? And in my head, it was like, yeah, he is a Downton Abbey guy. I just forgot which one. Yeah, he's Lord Cinderby from Downton Abbey, season 5.
Which is not our favorite.
Not a great season, but he's part of the best part of that season, which is Rose and Atticus. So good for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Anyway, High Sparrow, the Waif. Tommen being a weakling, even Sophie was just so done with Tommen. Walder Frey, Twincest, and Cersei.
Yeah, I didn't put Cersei, but I totally should. Lord Tarly, of course, the High Sparrow. Oh my god, Tommen, fuck man, what are you thinking? The Waif, I don't like the Waif, sorry. Walder Frey, who, you know, I love to hate him. So again, it's a great performance. All of these are great performances. I don't want that to be confused in any way, but these are worst parts to me of like what their characters are doing. And of course, Twincest. What grade did you give this episode?
B.
I gave it a C plus B minus. I think it's more of a B minus.
I think it's probably closer to a B minus because it's a lot of side quests that we do not need. Arya is probably the most important part of this episode and she's barely in it. So I think, yeah, B minus is probably the closest. I think it is a B minus because I do not give any shits about Sam and his family. The only reason I like Sam's family is because it has the prince. And so, like, what does that tell you? Like, I really don't care, Sam. I don't. You didn't need to do this. You could have just gone straight to Old Town and this wouldn't have happened. Anyway, it's kind of a useless part of the episode and it's a big part of the episode.
It's huge.
So
we get to see Hornhill though, and that's kind of cool looking.
We do. It reaffirmed the fact that I want to live in the Reach, in if I got to choose, because I do not like fish, so I don't want to live in the Riverlands. I don't love a lot of cold, and I also don't want to be closer to the White Walkers, so I'm not going to choose up north. Sorry, Starks. And I'm not going to live in King's Landing because I would hate that. So that leaves the Reach or Dorne, and I don't trust that they don't hurt girls in Dorne. So,
well, yeah, I don't trust that they don't hurt girls anywhere. So, but I think, you know, it's an interesting question. When I initially think about these things, I'm looking at the comfort of the accommodations. I'm not necessarily looking at, is it cold or whatever? And a lot of these castles are cool and have defensible things. Like, you know, the castle in the Vale is cool looking. It's got a moon door. You know, there's fun stuff.
But what if you're drunk one night and you fall through the moon door? What do you think about that? They have really shitty trial by combat, Mom. Do you really want to get in the crossfire of a trial by combat in the Eerie?
No. But it would be cool. And they've got like awesome views and stuff. Pike, very defensible. But again, you can get.
You do not want to live on Pike.
No, I don't. But you know, it's cool looking.
You want to get thrown off of a rope bridge by your sister? Like, what is wrong with
you? Quite honestly, I know that they filmed Dorne at the Alhambra in Spain, which is someplace I've always wanted to see. So I'm probably going to say Dorne for right now. Because again, the clothes are cool. It's warm. It is beautiful and beautifully decorated. You know, Moorish palace, all that stuff. So at the moment, I would say Dorne, although I don't think I really want to live there. Much like some part of me is like thinking Winterfell because they're, you know, the morality of the North appeals to me generally. But it is cold, so whatever. Anyway, so that's where we are. We are going to be rolling right along into our next episode in just a minute for us, but not for you.
I was about to say, we're not making this episode 2 hours long, Mom.
No, we're not. But we hope that you join us because season 6 has much more to come and we want to share it with you. So please tune in and
cheers.